Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, November 3rd. Doris J's Kitchen as poster child for Family First Frontiers. They pride themselves on grandma feel at restaurant that opened in 2020. The story was written by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Faith, Family, Foundation. The three pillars cemented into the frame of Doris J's Kitchen. Co-owned by Angelia and Brandon Govan, son Isaac Brown, and brothers Derek Brown, Marcus Miller, and Royal Sanders, the quaint restaurant sits tucked away in a shopping center off Illinois Avenue. At first glance, the space lacks curb appeal, a mistake made by the big corporations, not the tenants. Yet, after walking through the double doors of the soul food destination, a welcoming warmth overwhelms the simple setup, rushing cheeks with blood and forcing ear-to-ear grins. Named after Angelia's grandmother and mother-in-law, Doris Jean and Doris Jane, the establishment opened October 2020, fulfilling to-go orders via COVID-19 protocols. After restrictions lifted, the family affair moved their specialties to sit-down, owning a space with two large party-available areas and one more intimate raised area with booths. Priding themselves on family, Angelia and her family strive to provide a space for Midlanders to be transported back to their childhood. Whether born and raised in the tall city or new kids on the block, Doris J's Kitchen makes every customer second guess if they're in a West Texas eatery or their grandmother's house. Quote, "It's like a ministry to give people hope," Angelia explained. "Even in a pandemic, a lot of people asked, 'Y'all think you can do this? We have family and God, we're going to do it.'" End quote. With a menu packed full of made-fresh daily-to-order comfort food, here's the scoop on why you need to visit Doris J. Kitchen, 4200 West Illinois Avenue, Suite 160. Delicacies fill the entrees section of the Doris J's menu, usually selling out before the day ends. Daily delights include smothered pork chops and tender cooked chicken, while meals such as southern-style meatloaf, hearty chicken and dumplings, and malt-braised neck bones get loaded onto plates Thursdays and Saturdays. On Fridays and Sundays, tender beef tips over rice, and for that post-church finger-licking, try the oxtails, Sunday only. Make sure to let them know you're coming because the tails go quick. Each entree comes with a choice of three sides: green beans, candy yams, mac and cheese, fried okra, broccoli rice casserole, black-eyed peas, fried cabbage, mashed potatoes, and much more. From the grill, patrons can expect burgers, veggie option available, a fried pork chop basket, mini corn dogs, steak fingers, and more. For lighter portions, choose between a salmon rice bowl and three protein-loaded salads. Besides the meatloaf and pork chops, Angelia and Isaac said the fried catfish basket remains their number one seller by far. Prepped either grilled or bohemian style, hush puppies, lemon wedges, and a side accompany the unprocessed catch. For littles, a grilled peanut butter and jelly, chicken strips, corn dogs, grilled cheese, and a peanut butter and jelly waffle fit the bill. As for desserts, choose between various slices of cakes, cobblers, pies, and banana pudding. My recommendation, the pecan pie. Encompassing the homemade experience, each bite stands better than the last, with the perfect balance of sweet, gooey filling to salty, crunchy pecan. Delicious. Doris J's Kitchen also does catering. More information can be found on their website. For a non-alcoholic option, pick from sweet and unsweet tea, fountain drinks, lemonade, Kool-Aid, bottled water, and Topo Chico. Domestic beers include Budweiser, Bud Light, Dos Equis, Coors Light, and Michelob Ultra. Imported include Modelo, Corona, and Heineken. Bucket O' Beer are also available. For cocktails, Doris J's carries Long Island Tea, Jungle Juice, and their secret family specialty, DJ Juice. Wine coolers, margaritas, and mimosas also at the ready. In the hour, I sat across from Angelia and Isaac, asking them questions about their shop and family. I didn't get the impression they only wanted to talk to me for free advertising or business reasons. Every time I inquired, they did too, truly wanting to know the woman hanging out in one of their bright red booths. I have yet to find a 432 company that truly embodies what it means to be a family-run institution the way Doris J's Kitchen does. With most of the family working other jobs as well, they very well could only talk to the regulars or longtime friends. Instead, they genuinely get to know each person who walks through their doors. From lone wolves to social butterflies, the people of Doris J's Kitchen easily connect with any and every type of person calling Midland home, something many shops artificially slap on. Yet this vital ingredient keeps the crew afloat and puts them at the top of my must-try list for anyone within the city limits. I mean, why wouldn't you support good, kind-hearted people passionate about community engagement and fried food? When the warm fuzzies fill your chest and stomach, don't say I didn't tell you so. At a glance, what? Doris J's Kitchen. When? 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Thursdays through Saturdays, and 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Sundays. Where? 4200 West Illinois Avenue, Suite 160, Midland. Contact DorisJS.com or Facebook.com/DorisJS. Business Buzz. Life's obstacles don't stop Be the Light Candlemaker. The story was written by Ben Schaffer. Evan Petty suffered a stroke when he was born that left him with certain disabilities. These obstacles haven't stopped him from living a full life and doing what he loves. During the day, Petty works at Market Street, but in his spare time, he runs Be the Light, an organic beeswax candle business. He started making candles in December 2021 on his father's property. Petty buys large chunks of beeswax from San Antonio, cuts portions with a hot knife, mixes the wax with coconut oil to soften it and melt it down, then he filters wax into pitchers labeled coffee, vanilla, and cinnamon. Petty's father, Keith, helped kickstart the candle-making business after Petty expressed an interest in doing so for many years. Early on, Petty and his father experimented with different candle-making methods. Today, however, Keith claimed his son does it all in terms of manufacturing. Petty has spent a lifetime persevering through hardship. In early July, Petty went into Midland Memorial Hospital to get his wisdom teeth removed. He suffered complications with anesthesia during the procedure. Quote, "His heart crashed and he basically died," his father said. "He died again 3 hours later," end quote. On July 4th, Betty was life-flighted to Baylor University Medical Center, where he stayed until July 21st. The name of his business, Be the Light, comes from the Bible verse, Matthew chapter 5, verse 14, and has been his personal mantra for many years, according to his mother, Christy. Quote, Evan, in spite of him not being able to express himself like the rest of us, he's never stopped being the light, she said. During the time whenever he was dying, it was amazing the amount of people that prayed for that light, end quote. The advantages of Petty's beeswax candles, as opposed to a traditional soy or paraffin candle one might buy at a grocery store, are plentiful, he said. Beeswax candles act as natural air purifiers and stress relievers. They're also dripless and burn brighter and longer. Keith claimed he's burned one of Evan's candles for 80 hours and is still usable. Quote, A lot of people are allergic to soy, said Petty, who added that his candles don't contain soy, and that makes his delightfully scented and hard-working candles a must-have. At a glance, how to buy, what, Be the Light, who, Evan Petty. Details, mason jar organic beeswax candles are $30, teacup organic beeswax candles are $10. Where? Midland Downtown Farmers Market and the BeTheLightWithEvan.net. Campaign Finance, City Council, Mayor. Blong sets spending record. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. Lori Blong's campaign for Midland Mayor surpassed the $300,000 mark for contributions. Blong reported $170,000 raised during the October campaign finance period to bring her total during the past two periods to $307,525. She is $142 away from surpassing the current mayor, Patrick Payton, as the person to raise and spend the most dollars on a mayoral campaign in Midland's history. Payton reported raising $307,666 in campaign contributions and spending $194,000 on his three campaign finance reports surrounding the 2019 election. Long beat Payton's record spent in October alone, with $219,000 in political expenditures, according to her October report filed this week with the city secretary's office. For the campaign, she has spent $278,000. Her report showed she had $112,000 left in her campaign war chest prior to the November 8th citywide election. Her closest mayoral opponent in terms of campaign finance metrics is Jerry Morales. The former mayor reported raising $66,000 in October to bring his two-period total to $150,000. Morales also reported $72,900 in expenditures in October. That brings his total to $111,000 during the campaign. Morales showed $86,900 in political funds maintained. Blong's fundraising haul includes $90,000 from the Anwar family. Javed Anwar contributed another $30,000 to Blong this period. His children, Leslie and Ryan Anwar, also each donated $20,000 in October. During the previous campaign finance report, prior to October 1st, Vicky and Javed Anwar donated $20,000 to Blong's mayoral run. Blong also received $25,000 in October from Jamie and Kyle Stallings. Morales' largest cash donations during the previous period were $3,500 contributions from AJ Construction, Affinity Steel, Adams Development Group. The third mayoral candidate, Robert Allen Dixon, again reported $1,450 raised and $810 in expenditures. Campaign Finance, City Council, District 4. Berks expands fundraising advantage. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. Amy Stretcher Berks has increased her lead for campaign funds raised in the Midland City Council District 4 race. Berks reported collecting $10,900 during the October reporting period to bring her campaign total to $72,300. Her campaign finance report, turned in this week, also showed $33,900 in total campaign spending and more than $25,000 in contributions maintained as of the last day of the reporting period. Berks is running for the District 4 seat against Jim Garrity. Both turned in campaign finance reports for the October reporting period to the city secretary's office this week. With less than a week before the November 8th election, Garrity shows $11,800 in campaign contributions raised, $25,900 in expenditures, and $35,000 in loans taken out during the previous campaign finance periods. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, November 3rd. Donald Don Herman Hermanson, age 91 of Midland, passed away on October 26, surrounded by family. He was born to Ivor and Helen Hermanson in Muskegon, Michigan, on May 24, 1931. He is preceded in death by his wife of 56 years, Beverly Ann. Don is survived by his three sons, Mark, Brian, and Eric, two daughters-in-law, Pamela and Lisa, five grandchildren, and one great-granddaughter. A memorial service will be held at the Chapel of Nellie Pickle and Welch at 3800 North Big Spring Street in Midland on Saturday, November 5th at 2 p.m. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Donald Leon Wise, age 72, passed away peacefully and surrounded by his family on October 23rd at his home in Springtown, Texas. Known to his friends as Don, he was a local businessman in the Permian Basin for 40 years. Don moved to Odessa with his family at the age of 2, and that is where he completed his education. Don married his first wife, Brenda Van Winkle, in February of 1972. They lived in Greenwood and raised their daughter, Michelle. Brenda passed away after a long illness in 1999. In 2006, Don met Pamela Taylor of Fort Worth. They married in 2008 and shared a wonderful 14 years of marriage together. Don is survived by his wife, Pamela, daughter, Michelle Stillman, sister Judith Shields and husband Gary Shields, stepdaughters Diana Frame and Stephanie Densk, several grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. Don is preceded in death by his parents, Ballard and Billy Wise, sister Mona Taylor, and his first wife Brenda Wise. Funeral Mass will be held on November 4th at St. Anne's Catholic Church in Midland. Services will begin at 10 a.m. Charitable contributions may be made to St. Jude Children's Hospital and Disabled American Veterans. Tommy Wayne Reed, age 77, passed away at his home in Midland on Thursday, October 27. Tommy was born February 5, 1945, to Floyd and Margaret Reed in the hill country town of Dublin, Texas. Tommy leaves behind his children, Kimberly Pyle and her husband Tim, Melissa Johnson and her husband Scott, Michael Reed and Leslie Parrish and her husband Jeff, 9 grandchildren, and 17 great-grandchildren. He is preceded in death by his wife Deanna Williams Reed, son James Mitchell Ratliff, and great-grandson Landon Michael Shipley. A celebration of life for Tommy will be held Saturday, November 5th at 11 a.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home and Memorial Park, 4616 North Big Spring Street in Midland, 79705. Carmen Valencia, age 80, of Midland, passed away on Tuesday, November 1st. Viewing will be Thursday, November 3rd, from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Heavenly Gate Chapel. Funeral service is set for Friday, November 4th, at 2 p.m., also at Heavenly Gate Chapel. Burial will follow at Rest Haven North Cemetery. Arrangements were made with Heavenly Gate Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit the website at heavenlygatefh.com. Juventina Carmona, age 91, of Midland, passed away on Monday, October 31st. Viewing will be Sunday, November 6th, from 1 p.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary to be recited at 7 p.m. Sunday evening at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home Chapel. A funeral service is set for Monday, November 7th, at 10 a.m., also at Heavenly Gate. Burial will follow at Fairview Cemetery. Arrangements were made with Heavenly Gate Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit the website at LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Paul Smith of Odessa died on October 30th in Odessa. Funeral will be on November 4th at 2 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home, with burial immediately following at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, November 3rd. Salary study shows huge annual increase. Some council members signal willingness to raise taxes, bringing City of Odessa employees' salaries up to the same level as its peers would cost the city a minimum of $7.5 million to $9.5 million a year, and that amount doesn't include an increase in the ancillary costs associated with benefits, nor would it address compression, a human resource analyst told council members Tuesday night. When it comes to paying for the increases, at least two council members said they wouldn't be opposed to raising property taxes. Back in July, the Odessa City Council voted unanimously to hire an outside firm to look at all city employees' pay in comparison with other communities, but asked Evergreen Solutions to place a rush on first responders' pay because Odessa Fire Rescue is losing firefighters at a rapid rate, and some attribute it to poor pay. During Tuesday's City Council work session, Evergreen's Michael Mizrahi told the council Odessa's public safety employees are paid at least 15% below those in peer cities, but those numbers do not include the add-on pay firefighters are given for certain certifications they acquire as part of their job. While the add-ons probably improve firefighters' standing among their peers, they vary so much from firefighter to firefighter. It's impossible to determine how much exactly, Mizrahi said. Preliminary figures also show some general government employees are being paid as much as 20% below their peers, but on average, the city is paying its general government employees 4 to 7% below peer cities, Mizrahi said. Mizrahi gave the city council members four options on how they can place employees into new salary ranges. A couple of the options would immediately help with recruitment efforts by raising beginning salaries, but they wouldn't address compression, meaning there wouldn't be much of a difference between the salaries of new employees and those who have been with the city much longer periods of time. Some of the options are more baseline in nature. They're laying the framework, and others are more full service, so to speak. They'll fix your market issues and solve your compression issue, Mizrahi said during the meeting. Stressing the numbers are only preliminary, if the city were to decide to only address beginning salaries for general government and public safety employees, it would cost the city $7.5 million to $9.5 million, Mizrahi said. To go with one of the options that would address beginning salaries and compression for both sorts of employee groups, it would cost the city $9 million to $12 million, including extra costs associated with retirement and other benefits, Mizrahi said. In an email following the meeting, Odessa City Manager Michael Marrero also stressed the numbers are not final. Those figures are based on very preliminary general government estimates and depend on a number of assumptions about the direction of council, so should not be relied on with any degree of comfort, Marrero said. Whatever option the council chooses, Mizrahi said, he'd like them to consider dropping some of the add-ons since the city would be raising salaries. Many of the add-ons were created to help recruit and retain firefighters and therefore wouldn't be necessary anymore, he said. The council members expressed interest in pursuing options that would help address beginning salaries and compression. They directed Mizrahi to come back to them with more in-depth figures. Initially, Mayor Javier Hoven said he only wanted in-depth figures on the firefighters, but when council member Deitra White objected, the decision was made to get figures for all public safety employees. My understanding is they have asked us to provide them just some other slices of how to look at the data, where they can see a department-level impact and rank or classification-level impact, Mizrahi said after the meeting. They would like to see more granular details, is probably the best way to put it. So that's what we'll be working on next. The council also got into a short discussion about how to pay for salary increases and if they should be across the board. Council member Mary Willis told the council she's receiving calls from general government employees who are wondering if they'll be getting raises too. I don't want the council to be sitting in a position where we are the people who created a morale problem because we've pitted this group against that group, Willis said. Mata said the issue with the firefighters could have been taken care of 6 months ago. He pointed out police officers received a raise a few years ago and no large study was required. This time that completely changed, and instead of just addressing the problem that was at hand, we added everything else, Mata said. Council member Tom Sprawls said the only way he can see the city paying for the raises is to increase property taxes because the city simply can't rely upon sales taxes. Thompson agreed, we've got to figure out how to pay for it, which is going to be a big problem. It's not just a one-time shot. It's an ongoing situation. So how high are you willing to take taxes? Thompson asked. Mata said he thinks residents would be okay with a tax increase, and council member Denise Swanner agreed, saying they will if they want somebody to save their mother's life or run into a fire. I'm on council. I run away from fire. These guys run into a fire. These guys run into a shooting, not away from a shooting. So all employees are not equal. I want them to be, but they are not equal. Mata also told Sprawls, he's assuming the city council can't make adjustments on the budget. There's definitely ways you can cut the budget down so we don't have to impose a higher tax, Mata said. Hoven cut the discussion about property taxes short, stating he needs further information. This basically started with a real simple solution, and like government always does, it muddies the water as much as it can, Hoven said. So this is not about choosing sides, pitting people against each other, but there are some real questions here when we're looking at this monster. Now we're addressing everything. We're addressing from one department and one spectrum to the other. I definitely want to be able to see what we're looking at as far as the department where we are losing the most. Hoven pointed out cities are privatizing various departments, but cities cannot privatize its public safety departments. In other matters, the city heard from KDC Associates, a Midland company that is being considered to design and oversee a downtown improvement project. Kelly Cook, a partner with the firm, and Casey Hallmark, downtown Odessa executive director, told the council KDC looked at the downtown to see where an entertainment district could be located and where the city could get the biggest impact for the $7 million it issued in certificates of obligation 3 years ago. Cook provided the council with artist renderings of Jackson Avenue, but noted no location has been set in stone. They're suggesting Jackson Avenue because the project could take 6 months to 2 years and fewer businesses would be disrupted. There would be immediate changes taxpayers could see. It would link to public-private partnership projects that are already finished, and there'd be fewer interactions between pedestrians and vehicles. Cook and Hallmark said prior to the start of the project, KDC would engage businesses, members of the public, and the city council in discussions about the entertainment district's features. Hoven expressed frustration, noting engineering consultant Kimley Horn has already had multiple town hall discussions about downtown and written two downtown master plans. He also complained that $7 million isn't going to go as far as it did 3 years ago, and KDC would be taking a big chunk out of it too. Hallmark noted KDC originally asked for $900,000, but a committee scaled back on what it was asking of KDC to just the meat and potatoes. She also said KDC will make sure that what's built will fall within the city's budget and create a district that can be added on to as money becomes available. As for town halls, Hallmark and Cook said they plan to include downtown business owners, not the entire community. Hallmark and Craig Stoker, also from downtown Odessa, told Hoven the Kimley Horn downtown master plan was an overarching plan and the KDC project is just an aspect of it. They also pointed out that even if parts of KDC's vision are set aside for a while, the engineering portion of their work will be done and ready for when the funding is available. The council agreed to put KDC's contract on Tuesday's agenda. Big opportunity, UTPB choirs heading to national convention. Members of the University of Texas Permian Basin choirs will be traveling to Cincinnati in February to participate in the National American Choir Directors Convention. They will perform and then talk about what they performed and telling the audience about the composers. To his knowledge, Frank Eichaner, professor and Department of Music chair, said there has never been a choir from the Permian Basin selected to perform at the National American Choir Directors Convention ever. About 47 singers will be traveling The convention is February 22nd through 25th. Choirs taking part in the University Choir, Concert Choir, and Women's Choir, which will be performing a commissioned piece. We've got multiple choirs going because of the way that it works, but it's all the same singers, I. Channer said. A blind application was submitted for the convention. We didn't have our name on it. We had to put in the proposal and then send recordings. We found out early summer that we had been selected, so we'll be one of 9 college choirs from across the entire country to be at National ACDA, I. Channer said. The selection process is designed to be objective. Basically, a panel of chorale experts, which is the board, they listen to all of these blind, so they don't know who the application is from. They just see the text. They listen to the singers, but they don't know who it is or who conducts or where they're from. I. Channer said they picked the best based on what they hear, and then they find out this is who is coming. I. Channer said he doesn't know what the selection says about his teaching, but it says that we have an extraordinary number of incredible programs in our area that produce really, really high quality musicians and singers that when they get here, we can work together and make a really incredible product, which is comparable to or better than the best programs from across our country, I. Channer said. So in spite of the fact that we're small, in spite of the fact that we're rural, in spite of the fact that we're isolated, a choir with 30 vocal majors can beat out University of North Texas that has 1,600 majors to perform at National ACDA. So it says that we're doing the right things the right way, he said. Choral professionals from all over the world come to be part of the convention, meet other important directors, hear some of the best choirs in the country, and learn new repertoire. All of the music majors will have a chance to do the same and bring those experiences back with them. He said the accomplishment is remarkable because there was no music program at UTPB in 2004. When he arrived in 2014, there were 9 people in one choir. Everyone who is a vocal music major are in the university choir, the concert choir, and many are in the vocal ensemble, which produces musicals or operas each semester. Composer Julio Morales put choir members through their paces recently, as he has written some of the pieces they will perform. Morales and I. Channer met in the state of Tlaxcala, where I. Channer was teaching a workshop at a choral festival. They invite the best teachers around the globe, so they invited him, Morales said. Since then, I. Channer said, they have done multiple projects together. We've been down to Tlaxcala every year since then, I. Channer said. Julio was teaching his own workshop this summer. 2 summers ago, we did conducting workshops around the country. Morales was commissioned to write 3 scores, 2 of them Noche en Remanso, Canción Final. Employ the lyrics of Federico García Lorca, a Spanish writer and poet. The 3rd arrangement is called Afro Blue. Morales said he could turn out his scores at a rate of about once a month. I. Channer said Morales is in demand as a composer of scores. In the future, I will write the music of a show of Cirque du Soleil, and then we will have a Guinness record in Venezuela, Morales said. I. Channer said Morales was going to Venezuela to have 150,000 people sing some of his music all at the same time to set a record for Guinness Book of World Records. Morales said he will get to attend as a juror. He added that he has composed music since he was 5 or 6 years old. His grandfather was a saxophonist. He went to the University of Veracruz for music education and piano. Morales then started to write. Eichhanner said they were visiting schools in Odessa and around the area. 90% of my students come from 5 or 6 high schools here locally, Eichhanner said. One of the great things about music education is that you never get to a point where you know everything. When you're dealing with a new score composed by a person with a perspective and influences and passions and their own harmonic language, you get to learn about them. You get to see them and their experiences through the music that you sing, Eichhanner said. He added that it's always an incredible privilege to sing any piece of music. But I think that it's even a greater privilege when you get to premiere, which is the vernacular for singing it the very first time, to get to take somebody's musical vision and get to know them intimately through singing that score, making that music with them, Eichhanner said. Eichhanner said they are also raising funds to travel. So if somebody would like to help us out, they can find a way to donate on the UTPB music page. We are also going to do caroling this year, so if a group or a business owner or professional organization or a company would like us to come and sing as part of their holiday festivities, we would be delighted to come and spend a little Christmas cheer, and at the same time, the proceeds of that will pay the expenses of getting our kids up to Cincinnati, he added. They will start caroling as soon as they are booked. People could book us today, Eichhanner said. Landgraf announces town hall schedule. State Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican, Odessa, has provided the following schedule of upcoming town hall events in the 4 counties. Hector Loving Ward Winkler. He serves in the Texas House of Representatives. During these events, Landgraf will discuss the upcoming 2023 legislative session and take questions for those in attendance. In just 2 short months, the Texas legislature will convene for the 2023 session at the Texas Capitol, Landgraf stated in the press release. It is my duty to serve as your voice in the Texas House of Representatives, and town hall events like this are a good way for me to hear directly from the constituents I'm sworn and honored to represent. I hope folks will come out and join us for a little community and some good conversation. Town hall schedule, Loving County, 6 p.m. to 7 p.m., November 9th, Loving County Courthouse Lawn at 100 Bell Street in Mentone. Ward County, 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m., November 10th, Ward County Event Center at 1525 East Monahans Parkway in Monahans. Winkler County, 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m., November 14th, Winkler County Community Center at 308 Northwest 2nd Street in Wink. Hector County, 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m., November 15th at La Margarita at 1301 South Grant Avenue in Odessa. Barstow, 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m., November 16th, Barstow Community Hall at 100 Concho Street in Barstow. Quick Hits, Odessa Athletics Hall of Fame. The Odessa American Hall of Fame banquet is now sold out. The event will take place at 7 p.m. today at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Convention Center, 305 East 5th Street. Those being honored at this event have played a major part in shaping Odessa's sports culture, among them the 1946 state champion OHS football team and legendary football coach Gary Gaines. Visit tinyurl.com/MWN9C4CR. Get out and vote. Early voting for the November 8th general and the Hector County Utility District elections run through November 4th. Voters are welcome to call the elections office for location information. For Odessa, call 432-498-4030 and Midland, call 432-688-4890. Registered voters may also visit the webpage for early voting schedules, Election Day centers, and sample ballots. Ector, tinyurl.com/mrxn4yvd. Midland, tinyurl.com/36b5a3ct. Secretary of State, www.sos.state.tx.us. Mary Marketplace. The Junior League of Odessa has scheduled the 39th annual Mary Marketplace Sparkle and Shine, It's Christmas Time, today through Sunday at the Ector County Coliseum, 4201 Andrews Highway. Today, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m., premier shopping. Tickets are $100 per person, cocktail attire, and open bar. Friday, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., ladies' luncheon and fashion show. 11 a.m. to 7 p.m., general shopping. Luncheon table purchases available by emailing tickets at jlodessa.org. Luncheon tickets are $100 per person. Saturday, 9 a.m. to noon, breakfast with Santa. 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., general shopping. Breakfast with Santa tickets are $5. Sunday, noon to 5 p.m., general shopping. General admission shopping tickets are $10 and $10 for cart, wagon, trailer. 3-day pass for general admission shopping is $25 and $25 for cart, wagon, trailer. For tickets or information, visit jlodessa.org/mary-marketplace. Knit and Stitch Film Screening. The Alan Noel Art Museum, 4919 East University Boulevard, has scheduled Knit and Stitch with Film Screening Stash Busting Box from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. today. Visit tinyurl.com/3nx4rdu9. Carpet Tech comes through for Meals on Wheels. Just in time for the winter months, Carpet Tech has teamed up with Meals on Wheels of Odessa to collect canned soup donations for senior citizens in need in our community. Meals on Wheels delivers hot, nutritious meals to the homebound, elderly, and severely disabled who cannot prepare adequate meals for themselves. When Meals on Wheels began asking for food and supply donations for winter, we created the Soup for Seniors Initiative, a canned soup drive that includes our customers, said Carpet Tech Marketing Director Stephanie Fox. Carpet Tech is asking for donations of at least 5 cans of soup and offering donating customers a 15% discount on services. Technicians will collect cans when they come to clean. Not only do we get to give back to an often overlooked population of seniors in our community, but we have a unique opportunity to offer our customers a convenient way to participate, said Fox. Donated soups will help feed Meals on Wheels clients during weekdays and days when food delivery is unavailable due to severe winter weather. Canned soup is not only non-perishable, but a nutritious alternative that is easy for seniors to open and prepare, said Fox. Meals on Wheels of Odessa delivers a hot, nutritious meal to the elderly, disabled, and homebound citizens of Ector County. Their service helps these citizens to maintain their health, independence, and their dignity by remaining living in their own homes. To participate in Carpet Tech's Soup for Seniors initiative, call Carpet Tech at 432-520-5142 or visit www.carpettech.com. Book any cleaning appointment before October 23rd and donate 5 or more Pop Top soup cans to get a 15% discount. Carpet Tech is a family-owned floor care and emergency fire and flood restoration company. Carpet Tech has served residential and commercial customers for more than 25 years by building relationships and serving customers with excellence and integrity. With offices located in Lubbock, Amarillo, Midland, Odessa, Collins County, and Clovis, Carpet Tech is the region's most recognized cleaning and restoration company. pioneer supporting Permian area art education. One of Texas's largest oil and natural gas producers is partnering with the Museum of the Southwest to make art education programs more accessible to youth in all ages throughout the Permian region, a press release detailed. The partnership ensures educational programs offered through the museum's Turner Art Museum, Durham Children's Museum, and Blakemore Planetarium will be accessible to toddlers and teenagers alike through a variety of platforms, including drawing and art classes, storytelling, reading groups, and STEM opportunities, among many others. Pioneer Natural Resources, which bases its operations in Midland, is committing $50,000 to the initiative, which will allow the museum to offer classes at no or little cost to guests. Forging a partnership with the Museum of the Southwest to offer art education programs for youth in all ages in West Texas is a natural fit for us. Pioneer Natural Resources President and Chief Operating Officer Rich Dealey stated in the press release, "One of the company's enduring missions is supporting the communities where our employees live and work, and we're proud to be involved with the museum, so early education programs like these can flourish throughout the Permian region." The Museum of the Southwest is committed to engaging youth of all ages and abilities in immersive experiences that foster creativity and education. Numerous studies have consistently found that introducing students to art education at an early age improves their motivation, concentration, and confidence. There's also a statistical correlation between exposure to art programs and better performance in the classroom, including gains in math, reading, cognitive ability, creative thinking, and verbal aptitude. In Texas, high school students who completed more arts courses were twice as likely to graduate. 22% were more likely to attend college and had up to 15% higher pass rates on standardized tests than students who took fewer art courses, according to the 2021 State of the Arts report by the nonprofit Texas Cultural Trust. "We are humbled by the commitment of Pioneer Natural Resources to support this endeavor," Museum of the Southwest Executive Director Lori Wesley stated in the press release. "Art is not usually thought of as critical thinking. It is, however, the beginning of a new way of thinking. Must the grass always be painted green? Great change starts with the ability to see things differently, and we are invested in the community through the eyes and minds of our youth. Some programs made possible through Pioneer's partnership with the museum include Mommy and Me classes, works of art, play dates, off-site outreach programs, and a new field trip experience that correlates activities at the museum with Texas Essential Knowledge and Skills, TEX, goals. When your child comes for a field trip at the museum this year, they will not just enjoy the amenities on campus, they will also engage in activities that will support what they are learning in the classroom," Rebecca Mina, the director of the Freda Turner Durham Children's Museum, stated in the press release. "There is a need to provide well-rounded, engaging educational programs that foster expressive outlets for our children. We are grateful to Pioneer for their support to make this a reality for our community," she said. Since its founding in 1997, Pioneer has established itself as a state and regional leader in oil and gas exploration, industry, innovation, and production. Throughout its growth in Texas as a large independent energy company, among its enduring missions has been a deep devotion to philanthropy and volunteerism. Pioneer support for the museum goes beyond its pocketbook. Employees regularly volunteer at numerous museum events aimed at building stronger communities through access to the arts. At the museum's recent September Fest, Arts Festival, for example, more than a dozen Pioneer employees volunteered their time to ensure the success of the annual celebration. We are beyond grateful for the Museum of the Southwest sharing its story of culture and diversity through art education. Amanda Day, Pioneer's senior government and public affairs advisor, stated in the press release, Pioneer is proud to extend this compelling story to some of our youngest learners in the Permian through our sponsorship of the museum's Children's Art Education Program. Petroleum Museum presents Brown Bag Lunch and Lectures. The Petroleum Museum's Brown Bag Lunch and Lectures will present Cody Mobley, site manager, Fort Cavett State Historic Site, speaking on painting with silver and light, photography of the 19th century from 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., November 8th. The Petroleum Museum's Brown Bag Lunch and Lectures gives the community the chance to visit with authors, scientists, artists, and historians who recount the petroleum industry's beginning, present, and future, along with topics of local and historical interest. These lectures are sponsored by Norma J. McGrew and Hal Proctor, Charitable Bank, Bank of America, N.A. Trustee. Admission is always free. Drinks and desserts are provided. Standing on a hilltop outlook in West Texas, the remains of a 170-year-old Fort McCavitt is considered one of the best preserved and most intact examples of Texas Indian War's military post. Along with serving as the site manager for this beautiful historic site, Mobley also preserves its history through photographs. Permian High School Band Bound for State Competition. Saturday night, the Permian High School Marching Band took first place at the UIL Area Contest and with it qualified for the State Marching Band Contest for the second year in a row. Mojo will march at 7:30 p.m. on Monday night at the Alamo Dome in San Antonio. PHS will be one of 42 Class 6A bands that qualified for state. This is Permian's 20th appearance at the UIL State Marching Championships. Throughout its history, PHS has had one UIL state champion and two Texas honor bands, a news release said. In the fall semester, schools from across the state compete in regional marching contests for a ranking to qualify for an area competition. Both Permian High School and Odessa High School advanced to the area marching band contest at Ratliff Stadium last weekend. This area includes schools from Abilene to the Panhandle to El Paso. Just 3 of 15 bands advanced to state. OHS advanced to the finals of the area contest and placed 5th overall. For those who cannot make the trip to San Antonio, the contest will be watched via live stream from the UIL Marching Band Contest website, uiltexas.org/music/marching-band/Texas, though it does require a subscription fee. Pfluger to host election night watch party. U.S. Congressman August Pfluger, Republican San Angelo, is inviting the Permian Basin to the Republican election night watch party from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Tuesday at Max Barbecue in Midland. The event is co-hosted by Texas State Senator-elect Kevin Sparks. The Midland County Young Republicans, the Midland County Republican Party, the Midland County Republican Women, and the Republican National Hispanic Assembly Midland Chapter. This is an open press event.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.